the physical aspects of a particular phenomenon, right? Your program runs as if there is no physical phenomenon. Whereas from the point of view of basic physics, physicists and mathematicians, the physical processes neglect the properties of computing and communication platforms. So most of our laws of physics or control theory, and obviously the classical control theory was built when there were no computation and no communications. So even the modern control theory does not take into account the properties of computing and communication. Now, how do we bring these two fields together? It's a scientific and technology challenge today. And moreover, how to secure them is a bigger challenge. So if you just apply a simple combination of physical processes and computation processes, it would be very inefficient. It would be extremely inefficient and actually will not solve the problem of modeling of these systems. So I'll give you an example, shipping. Shipping is a very good example, a very large scale cyber physical system. I'll take an example of JNPT Mumbai. JNPT Mumbai terminal is connected by 60 different shipping companies to 43 or 45 different ports across the world, with daily sailings to every major port called in the world. And these are cyber physical systems, because you're moving of cargo, you're moving of containers, actually is done by computers. So one mistake in computing can create havoc in shipping, for example. Healthcare. India right now is on the verge of offering perhaps one of the best healthcare systems in India. And as of today, the Joint Commission International has aggregated only 19 hospitals in India. There are 20,000 hospitals in India. Out of that, only 19 are aggregated by JCI. But India is poised to become a major healthcare hub. Smart grid, another example. Okay, look at a smart grid. Smart grid is nothing but an overlay of electrical grid with sensors such as the PMUs and control systems to enable. Now when I talk about control systems, I'm particularly interested in SCADA. That's my area of interest. And you know, we've been working on the SCADA security for some time. And SCADA happens to be a core component of majority of CPSs. You look at railway systems, railway monitoring, signaling system, SCADA. We talk about smart grid SCADA. We talk about water waste management SCADA. We talk about water management SCADA. We talk about oil and gas SCADA. Okay? And all of these are major cyber physical systems. So if you look at this picture here, it's a combination of many components. You know, we have smart appliances, we have storage of electricity here, generators, plants, sensors, okay, all put together. A huge, perhaps one of the most complex engineering artifact designed by man. Okay, and we have within smart grid a component called smart metering. Smart metering has already been implemented in some cities in India, for example, in some parts of Ahmedabad, I know, or Gandhinagar, one of those places. The idea of smart metering is to enable energy management, load balancing and billing. You know, from demand side management and demand side resources, okay. Now let us assume that, you know, the data which is, what is a smart meter? Smart meter is nothing but instrument which is installed in your house, right? And you are able to program that instrument according to your needs. So if I say I want to use only 600 units this month, and I don't want to pay more than like say 500 rupees a month, I can program my smart meter, and this smart meter programming will actually tell the demand side, sorry, the supply side, what kind of electricity generation is anticipated in the next cycle. Okay, so it improves energy efficiency. However, it also poses a problem of privacy and secrecy. For example, if somebody were to read my data from my smart meter, for example, he can figure out what devices I use at home. Do I have a microwave on? How many refrigerators do I have? How many fans, TVs, things like that? When do I use them? When I am at home. And my lifestyle routines can actually be exposed if somebody actually were reading my smart meter, right? So it's a kind of a privacy issue, okay? So we have a very interesting opposing forces of privacy and secrecy. Okay. Privacy is not secrecy, and obviously the privacy problem is that you disclose data which informs or which provides or gives out informational utility while also considering the potential loss of privacy. In this, we consider every user is a potential adversary. My neighbor could be an adversary. Encryption is not a solution in this kind of a situation. However, for secrecy problem, encryption could be a solution. If I want to keep my data secret, I can encrypt the data, and that is what happens in most of these energy meters. Okay, so there are certain possible solutions. For example, I can have a robust design with privacy constraints, utility and privacy trade-off, privacy invasion detection prevention, masking of data, and anonymizing the data. So when you send data, you don't put my name in it. You don't put my IP address. You don't put my address. Okay, that's the solutions. Other concerns. Now, just keep aside the smart metering problem. Is today our energy, healthcare, water which you drink, shipping, transportation, are these systems vulnerable to attacks? Any one of you? Answer is probably yes. And some government people tend to think that, you know, next major terrorist attack could be on one of them instead of like a physical attack. What, if any, are there any vulnerabilities in such systems? The answer is there are vulnerabilities. And if exploited, how can such vulnerabilities affect the people? I'll give you an example. In 2013, we had, if you remember, we had an IEEE workshop in President Hotel President. There also I spoke on the same topic, but with a different. It was from the energy smart grid. There was a incident in US about I think 6-7 years ago, 2009, where a oil field transformer was blown up using a cyber attack. Now, oil field transformers usually are used in the basement of tall buildings. So, if you can blow up a transformer by, you know, changing some values, I mean, if you just change the frequency of a transformer or the voltage plus to minus, it can generate enough heat to blow up the oil inside the transformer and things like that. So, basically, the question is the CPS, although it is cyber and physical system, the core of these systems basically is a control system. And when I say control systems, particularly it is a SCADA, supervisory control and data acquisition systems. Are these systems robust enough to withstand deception attacks? These are the questions we have to ask. Are these control systems programmed to withstand denial of service attacks? The answer is no. Okay. What will happen if we lose part or even most of the computing systems today? Will redundancy, which is studied by the computer scientists today, can solve the problem? Something to think about. How to measure and quantify resilience of such systems? Can we have fault-tolerant systems? Can we have resilient systems? Can we have redundant disaster recovery systems? And how do we ensure high availability of CPS? Okay, I'll give you another example. I just go further. I'll come back to the slides. I just want to give you an example of some examples of CPS other than the ones I gave you earlier. A pacemaker is an example of cyber physical system because it is attached to your body, right? is a physical system. Implantable cardiovascular defibrillator also is a CPS system. Insulin pump and neurostimulators. These are implantable medical devices. Okay. I'll come back to my early slides. Okay. Let's imagine that one of these systems, medical implantable systems, are captured, compromised, and released by adversaries. Okay. How do you identify and ameliorate the system damage, okay, with potentially untrusted and modified software? To add to the complication in the problem, these systems require real-time responses to physical processes, because most physical processes are continuous in nature. They are not discrete. The physical laws are based on continuous systems, so they require real-time responses. There's very little study has been done on how attacks, see such attacks, affect the real-time responses of CPS. There are some study called concurrent systems, okay. Concurrent systems study all these, but the number of studies which have been done in this still are, you know, have to be more in numbers to be able to understand these properties. And how do you guarantee the real-time requirements under attack? If a system is under attack, if my pacemaker or my insulin pump is under attack, how do I, you know, ensure that it works? Okay. Now, as I said, CPS is concurrent in nature. So they are running both physical system and the cyber systems process. And there's more research required in handling large-scale concurrent systems, which perhaps require more attention. Okay. Let's take an example of a greenhouse. You know, if you see a greenhouse here, on one side, greenhouse is attached to a temperature sensor. On the other side, there's an actuator attached to it, which is a fan. Temperature sensor is also attached to network, and your actuator also is attached to network. So on one side, you're attached to the computing process, and the other side you are attached to the physical process. Blending process in a chemical plant, for example. Here again you have the physical processes going on here, and then you have the agitator motor, which is attached to perhaps a information system, some kind of embedded systems. And again I mentioned some of these. Let's take a look at the abstractions. This is my component view of a CPS. So I have a physical system, and this physical system is attached to, you know, sensors, actuators all over, and this, again, this actuator is connected to a network. Network behaves in a fashion which is different than the physical system, right? And you have the actuator in between, which actually on one side is taking input from an information system, and it's supposed to control a physical process. Okay. Systems view. Okay. Control systems. Control systems, we have a physical system. Okay. The control system, the actuators and sensors. Let's say if I vary the value of Y and U, input and output. Okay. What if I change the value of Y and the change the value of U? What is going to happen? How can I do that? By compromising the control systems network. Okay. So I can jam the network, right? There are some existing techniques which I think most of you are aware of. I'm not going to go into details of this. Authentication, signatures, access control, intrusion detection, they've been talked about for years. Very mature technology. People probably know about it. And there are hundreds of companies working on it, a lot of research happening. But is this going to work for CPS? Anyone here? I don't think so. Most of these techniques actually will not work necessarily for the CPS. The question remains, how can you measure or detect deception attacks or denial of service attacks? Okay. How how do you detect intrusion detection and deception attacks in control systems? Control systems, for example, in electricity networks, work on estimation, state estimation. State estimation is not dependent on packets and protocols themselves. You know, there's a physical law, there's Kirchhoff's laws and all the electricity laws which are working to estimate a state of a system. How do I detect anomaly in state estimation, for example? Not very well studied as of today. What if a human is not in the loop for intrusion detection? In most SCADA systems, or almost all SCADA systems, there's a man in the middle, in the loop, who takes decision, because it's called supervisory control. So there's a big screen in front of you. You know, the screen tells you, it's called human-machine interface, and it tells you what's going on in the system, and a human takes a decision, a call. What if that human is not there? Okay, there are certain incidents which have happened in SCADA industry for the last 20 years. Some of the links are here, you know, and the most important one, most of you would have heard about Stuxnet, right? Anybody who's not heard of Stuxnet? Very famous 2010, Night Dragon, Dukiu, Nitro, and there's a famous example of North Pole toys around the same time, 2012. See, 42% of all incidents happen because of mobile malware. Well, this phenomenon of mobile for the last 8 to 10 years actually has complicated lives of most people in SCADA. And 61% of the perpetrators were external sources, and 43% of perpetrators were authors of these malware. Traditional security, all of you are aware of this. It's what they call a CIA, confidentiality, integrity and availability. I need not go further into this. However, if you look at CPU security, the most important aspect is latency or responsiveness. Okay. Control systems cannot afford a server crash like we do in IT systems. There are SCADA system servers which have been running for 20 years continuously. You cannot do a patch management on a SCADA system like you do in IT systems. There is no downtime, okay, because responsiveness is of paramount importance. Okay, obviously, other than, if you go back here, confidentiality, integrity, availability. Availability being the third most important aspect. In this case, it is the second one. Integrity, obviously, and confidentiality is the last aspect of CPS. Why? Because, for example, if I'm talking about a packet which is taking information from a transformer to a master terminal unit, all the information it has is probably the voltage, current, phasor values, and some other values. Those values actually have no importance as far as confidentiality is concerned. Even if you read it, okay, it's not going to help you much by knowing the information. Okay, and obviously another important aspects of GPS is graceful degradation. If a system is under attack, it doesn't shut down completely. So the efficiency goes down gradually and gracefully. Unlike in IT systems, you know, if you are attacked by a malware or a virus, you probably will be shut down completely. So CPSs cannot afford to shut down completely. So you may have some kind of a degradation in a very graceful manner, and under very severe attacks, they may shut down. But the whole idea of this study is that, you know, how do we prevent the complete shutdown of a CPS? Because unlike in IT systems, let's compare a damage scenario of a traditional IT system versus CPS. For example, Let's say somebody hacks into a banking system, and it happens these days, you know, not very frequently, but it does happen. The only damage you can cause to somebody or some entity is perhaps financial. You can steal my money, whatever money I have, perhaps, you know, cause some kind of a financial distress, and little bit of economic downturn if you attack a bigger system, a country or a big bank. Whereas if you attack a CPS, you can cause damage to property, you can cause damage to lives. So there's a famous Maruchi incident which talks about, you know, somebody spilling over sewage into the town, 200,000 liters of sewage into the town of Maruchi by manipulating a SCADA system. And there I am talking about a physical damage. Okay, a guy, an insider, a disgruntled employee can do this. You can imagine a trained hacker who has a good understanding of CPS can cause real, you know, massive damage. So SCADA, I think most of you know, SCADA is used in manufacturing industry, power generation, fabrication, oil and gas, and each one of them happen to be what we can call as a critical national critical infrastructure. So today the governments are not actually worried about hacking of a banking system or hacking of a information system anymore. There are plenty of solutions available, plenty of vendors are working in it, solutions are available. Today the research directions are into, you know, how to protect critical information infrastructure. A typical RTU is basically a remote terminal unit which is connected to your sensors. You know, the sensor could be a valve opening for a water management system, or it could be a intelligent electronic device on a smart grid. Okay. These are very simple devices. They are nothing but microprocessor controlled remote, you know, RTUs. And these are the interface between physical objects in a SCADA. Okay, so my RTU is sitting right on top of a valve, for example, on a water management system. Okay, and is managed by a SCADA. It transmits telemetry data to SCADA, for example, water quality or pH value of water. Okay, very simple device. PLC, as you know, is a good old programming logic controller which is still used in many places and has a ladder logic. Okay, you can program these systems in such a way they work in a particular logic over and over again for years and years and decades together. Okay. And these are typical scan. HMI is, as I mentioned, is a human machine interface, and most SCADA systems have a man in the loop to take decisions. Okay, these are typical, you know, screenshots of HMI. Okay, despite all these techniques of, you know, hundreds of solutions available in the world, why do you think, you know, systems are getting compromised every day? No one has an answer to this. I mean, I know companies like Symantec and Trend Micro and you know, all kinds of startups coming with all fancy gadgets, equipment, software. You are not able to protect even traditional IT systems which you have been studying for the last 20 years. Okay, they, even today they get compromised. We are still doing the cat and mouse game with these, and compromise of CPS is just beginning to happen. So how can a CPS continue to function above a given threshold in the presence of attacks? This is what I was talking about, graceful, you know, inefficient way of shutting down. Two stories. I'll just talk a little bit of these stories. Stuxnet maybe is more well known. Another very well known in SCADA world is this North Pole Toys. And, you know, it is an online retailer, very famous toy manufacturer. Okay. In 2011, they replaced the old manufacturing system with a new ICS, industrial control system, basically nothing but SCADA based system. Okay. So what they did was to enable them to, you know, to keep away the server from the front end, they established a air gap. They said, okay, no, we'll not connect them. We'll not connect the manufacturing system to the IT system. So they used to carry a USB from the main server to the workshop. So somebody will go to the server, take out the USB, come to the manufacturing system, so that, you know, they could establish an air gap and there'll be no attacks. So what happened one day before Thanksgiving, okay, instead of one toy per box, the system started packing multiple toys per pack. And some boxes were packed empty. Okay. So initially it was suspected that the PLC was a problem. They inspected the PLC. Okay. But they found the code was correct. They discovered this worm. This worm here. It had infected the PLC and the main office computers. Okay. And this was causing, it had infected the your USB drive. Okay. So an air gap necessarily does not prevent you from any attack. I'm just established that. Stuxnet, very famous. What is Stuxnet? You know, for nuclear enrichment, you need at least, you know, they had an 8700 centrifuges, and they were replacing 10% per year. And then this is what, you know, so some story. What happened was this: on June 17, 2010. A computer belonging to an Iranian, okay, customer of virus block ADA was caught in a reboot loop. What happens in uranium is, if you, I don't know, I'm not a nuclear scientist, you have 235, 234 and 238, and the enrichment process requires centrifuge in a vacuum, okay. And what they did was the centrifuge works at a particular speed, okay. This virus actually changed the speed and the frequency of that centrifuge. Okay, it was a zero-day vulnerability virus.
What does that mean?
Zero-day meaning, you know, something which is for which there is no virus antivirus established. Something which is, you know, perhaps discovered for the first time. So it has a lot of these vulnerabilities which were discovered. And it was using a file which is found in the virus called stub and mrxnet. What it did was it used a file called .lnk, and it drops a new copy of Stuxnet onto another systems without renaming those files. Okay. It also drops a rootkit with the password in it. Okay. And the idea was to not take any action for a few weeks. Lie low for a few weeks, and suddenly one day it starts changing the speed of the centrifuge and the frequency of how many times it has to run. And they use certain driver files which had a certificate, digital certificate, stolen from some company in Taiwan. So what are the vulnerabilities? Print spooler, Windows keyboard file was infected. And the task scheduler file was infected. The static password of Siemens RTU was compromised. And this what it was doing. There was in the command for the centrifuge, there was something called step 7, which controlled the frequency converters. And this virus replaced them by their own commands and changed the whole schedule for rotation. So it actually searched for a specific value, which is this value, okay, and modified it. So what happened was, it stayed quiet for 2 weeks, increased the frequency of the converters to 1410 hertz for 15 minutes, restored them to a normal frequency of 1064 hertz for 27 days, dropped the frequency down to 2 hertz for 15 minutes. What actually happened was, you could not produce enough uranium, okay, to be able to use it wherever they were using it. So it was, if you can imagine, from the Iranian point of view, what kind of damage it has caused. Imagine such a thing happens in a country like India. Now Indian government is worried about it. It was worried about it that time, and I can tell you first, you know, with some certainty that we're not very sure if a virus like this appears again in Indian context. We cannot tell with certainty that, you know, it never happened in India. Just a refresher about control systems. You know, all of you probably are aware of this. These are the standard equations for linear feedback systems. You know, you have the continuous system and the discrete system here. Okay. And how do we ensure optimal state estimation under noisy circumstances? You know, we talk about Kalman filters and all that. These are the discrete versions of it. So how do you ensure optimal state estimation in the noisy measurements? If you were a control engineer, for example, the problem boils down to how to maintain a control system in an optimal manner, okay, under very noisy circumstances. Let's assume the attack which is happening on the control system SCADA is nothing but noise, okay, in a continuous system. So we assume Gaussian random noise, zero mean and Q and R nothing but what they call as error covariance matrices in Kalman filters, and assuming that both of them are greater than zero. So what we are saying in control systems is that every raw measurement which you measure in a control system may not arrive at the controller due to estimation. It could be because of network congestion. This is where we are talking about the combination of the physical process and the information systems, because Kalman filters are the only algorithm today which can actually take into account what we call as network congestion. In Kalman filter terminology, it is nothing but noise, because Kalman did not have any information systems to model it. So what you need is a Kalman filter that take into account packet losses. So packet losses in information technology, information science, is equivalent of noise or noisy measurement or error in Kalman filters. Okay. So to some extent, Kalman filter comes the closest to where we can actually, you know, somehow unify information systems with physical systems. And then a little bit about the fault tolerant control. Okay, the standard PID controller stands for proportional integral derivative controllers. Equation is, you know, this is a very well known equation for, and these are coefficients for proportional, integral, and derivative. If the controller is only P and D, then you omit obviously this one, and then depending on what kind of controllers you have. In a proportional controller, for example, there's a tendency to oscillate, you know, increases with increasing gain, and error decreases with increasing gain, and is always in a steady state error, always, which is very similar to Kalman filters. In PD controllers, proportional and derivative controllers, steady state error disappears completely. And again, PI. And PID controller, obviously, the dampening increases with increasing, inverse of the coefficient of D, derivative. Okay, so I'm trying to explain some part of effects of control systems using some of the classical control theory, modern control theory, as well as a little bit of information theory, cryptography, and security. For example, let's take an example of medical device attack. I'm wearing an implantable medical device. Okay, there's a pump inside my heart. This pump actually it can be hacked using GNU radio, very simple open source radio software. Okay, you can hijack my pump using a GNU radio. you can actually switch off my device. You can even inject dangerous dose of medicine to my heart, okay? And you can even disable the security incidents, alerts. How does it happen? I can reverse engineer the transmissions. The transmission is happening 175 kilohertz. I capture the RF transmission using GNU radio and use the oscilloscope to identify the transmissions from the implantable device to the programmer, trace analyze using MATLAB and the GNU radio tool chain which is available open source, and I can discover the communication protocol. Once I discover the communication protocol, I can eavesdrop using the same library, establish a transaction timeline, and don't need to decode anything. The meaning of transactions are deciphered by observing the order. Just by observing the order of transactions, I don't have to read the instructions themselves. I can figure out what is happening inside this implantable device, and it can be easily hacked. A typical protocol. We have a telemetry acknowledgement, auto ID, ID of the device, model serial number, integration, patient data is transferred, and then you have a command. For that command, you have a response. Okay. So, using a universal radio, software radio peripheral, simple peripheral, and a basic TX board, I can actually attack your IMD, okay, and replay the desired transmission and then evaluate the IDD state. So this is one example of a cyber attack on a CPS. So you can trigger an ICD identification, disclose patient data, for example. Auto identification will followed by interrogation command, which will make the device response with the name of the patient, his diagnosis, his whole details. So you walk into a hospital, for example, where hundreds of such devices are actually working at one time, and if you're interested in a particular patient, okay, you can sit 10 feet in close to that patient and actually get all this information using open source tools. You can disclose cardiac data, you can change therapies, okay. So one question is, can we encrypt this information between the program and the ICD? The answer is yes, but actually it doesn't solve the problems because, okay, there are zero power approaches, for example, zero power notification, zero power authentication and sensing, but it is actually not solving all the problems because if I have a protocol like this, okay, look at, there is a programmer here and there is a device here, in between there is a handheld device which is given to the patient, okay, so whenever there is a transfer, a legitimate transfer to happen, the device, the patient actually is supposed to press a button. Okay, it's called the wireless identification sensing platform. Okay, so you have, for example, zero power notification, you alert patient when a security sensitive event occurs. So if a particular dose of medicine is being given to you, it will vibrate in your hand. Okay, and you press a button, for example. Or zero power authentication. You harvest the RF power, okay, to power some kind of a cryptographically strong protocol, establish some kind of a key distribution scheme to authenticate request. All these things are possible, okay. The typical protocol which is used, you know, you have a authenticate request, and you know, YSP, WISP sends an identity number in a nonce, and then it computes using a function of KM, which is nothing but the master key, and I, which is the serial number of the device, and then it sends this information, and the patient is supposed to press a button, the R and R dash matches, and then the actual information goes to the device. Okay. Now look at this now. If I have a device, which is implantable device, a commercial programmer can do all of this. He can determine whether the patient has an ICD, what kind of ICD, ICD number, ID number, any private telemetry information can be obtained, okay, identity of the patient, he can change device settings, he can change or disable therapies or deliver command shock, he can deliver a shock. And if you look at this here, the software radio program also actually can do all of that. Okay, now if a software radio programmer can also change my device settings or change my therapies, okay, none of the protocol which I just mentioned actually going to be useful. Okay, if I were just an eavesdropper, a passive eavesdropper, I can still do all of this. I can read all of your values except for changing in device settings, but I'm reading everything. I'm reading your dosage, I'm reading what is your, you know, heart rhythm and whatever issues you have in your heart, but I'll not be able to change anything. So using a simple, you know, program, you can actually attack a medical device. Irrigation system, this is a little more interesting. I'll just go through very quickly. There's a, in South France, there's a, you know, Gignac irrigation canal where this experiment was done. How you can actually use cyber attacks to change the level of water in canal and also the flow of water in canal. You can actually take water deceptively from a canal, okay, by doing a cyber attack. Three examples, Tehama in Willows, California, Maruchi, Australia, I just mentioned about Maruchi, and Harrisburg and Pennsylvania. The three major incidents of SCADA in water management. Okay, what is SCADA in water management? The SCADA system actually is fed with policies. For example, a policy about when to open the canal, when to close the canal, how many times frequency, at what level, and things like that. And then it monitors your level and velocity of water, for example. Okay, and this is the input to the SCADA system. The output goes to the hydraulic actuators, which actually motors, which will pull up your gates, for example, drop your gates, and the length of the amount of water to flow and all that. Okay. Let's say if I have a, you know, model of irrigation canal like this, and here is, you know, my gates. I have gate 1 here, 1, 2, 3, 4 in, you know, M, and this is the, this is my water depth, this is my this is the depth of the gate, this is the water depth, actual water depth, velocity V1 at T and X, and velocity V2 and so on and so forth, and this is my upstream and downstream gates. Okay, if you look at this, these are the equations which are used for the shallow water equations. So if you look at this, these equations, the upstream and downstream discharge is mentioned here. So I have velocity 1 at 0 and T, and depth 0 and T is equal to nothing but the opening of upstream and downstream gates, and square root of the depth of water when the gate is up, and depth of water is at Y1. At this value, I have the same values, but now I have the depth of water at down. So if you look at these equations, upstream and downstream discharge gate, I can actually, by changing the values of YI, I can actually adversely can affect withdrawal from one or more of these offtakes by deceptively changing these values. So water is withdrawn by discreetly opening and closing the, okay, and if you look at this diagram here, this is my offtake here, opening here, okay, and here, this is my closing of the offtake, and this is my deception attack. So the actual opening and closing of gate, I can mask it, I can stop it, and my attack says that, you know, this, my sensor says here, attack will start here, like this, ends here. So what I end up here is something like this. The actual water level is this, okay, this is my water level, time versus level water. So if I have this response, my water level goes like this, because I opened the gate here, like this, but the computed values something look like this. So the actual water which is there in the canal is different than what is shown in the SCADA HMI. So the SCADA guy who is sitting in front of the screen thinks that water is, you know, at the prescribed level, but actually I have stolen water from there by using a cyber attack. So the question is, these attacks are increasing every day, okay? And the point is that, you know, when we talk about water management, water being so scarce today, okay, these attacks actually can create social disturbance also. Okay. So some government bodies are actually talking about some serious work in water management systems and protecting these systems from such attacks. So what are the aspects to consider? You know, one is adversary model, okay, trust model, whom to trust, you know, as far as users and devices are concerned. What is the under attack behavior of such system? And I said graceful degradation. Even if there is an attack, you know, on such systems, it should degrade in a graceful manner, not completely crash in the sense, you know, water management showed you. And independence in component design. Potential research directions, you know, which we have kind of noticed in a couple of years. One is to study the overall design of these components separately and determine the security gaps, okay, in, you know, which is related to Indian context. And then the modeling, what is the state space of the reach node, the node which is supposed to be attacked. What are the constraints across these nodes? If and how an attacker can violate these constraints, modeling of these. How can nodes in a supply chain be compromised? The very important first point is this, are the existing ideas, techniques, educate. Can you give me an example where the typical ideas, semantic and Cisco's and you know, those kind of things can actually help here? I really don't know. I don't think so, because the actual physical processes are completely transparent to these devices, because there is no intrusion happened in this. None of these actually is an intrusion in the sense of an IT intrusion. There was no packet you know, injected into the system at all. What are the monitoring tools which we need to check the health of a system? Can we use a typical standard IT monitoring tool for this? Are there attacks which are different from the existing ones that can sabotage a supply chain or any CPS? Yes. How do we defend such attacks? I just give an example of a canal. There can be attacks on wastewater management. There could be attack on oil and gas, similarly. How do you design controllers that can continue to function in the presence of deception and denial of service? Okay. Role-based access control, very well-known mechanism in IT. Is it adequate in control systems or tertiary role-based access control? Adequate answer again is, has to be, you know, studied further. We don't know. Now, as far as, you know, the theoretical foundations are concerned, a lot of work in control theory, has been done in Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley. Game theory, University of Texas, Arlington. Verification and testing of such systems is happening in Purdue, and then specification-based CPS has been happening in University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We feel that, you know, traditional security such as cryptography, networks, operating system and CS subjects are important in themselves. However, CPS security will require a lot of interdisciplinary education. There are very few people today who can understand cryptography on one side and a deep understanding of control theory on the other side. Okay. We have wonderful control theorists in this country, control engineers in this country. And we have good cryptographers and security analysts. But I really doubt, and I don't know how many people actually know both the disciplines together. So need a background in control theory, game theory, industrial automation, and domain background in which you are applying the CPS. For example, if you are working in smart grid, knowledge about electricity, power systems. If you're working in water management systems, and so on and so forth. Obviously, ability to acquire necessary background, a lot of self-learning is required because these subjects are not taught in a traditional curriculum as of today. The summary of this is that, you know, I tried to explain what is the CPS, why existing techniques in IT systems for detection and prevention may not work in CPS at all, and what research directions India ought to take in its traditional education to fill this gap. And I hope, you know, some of these areas which I discussed may be of some help, you know, some interest to you. And if you need any information, especially in smart grid or water management, we have done some work in water management, we've done some simulation work. In electricity, we have done using, of course, MATLAB. And today we are able to detect an intrusion, but we are not able to detect the location of this intrusion. For example, if electricity network grid is attacked, there are means of finding out if it's a cyber attack, not a natural fault, because there is a difference between a fault and a cyber attack. Faults will always follow physical laws. A cyber attack will not follow physical laws. So we can figure out today, but still today it's an open question, open problem to locate the adversary in a power system. These are my references. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Dr. Zia, for very informative talk on the interplay between IT and the physical systems, why there is this gap. Also brought out a lot of actual kind of incidents that led to this probably the new field of interest in R&D and open problems. So maybe people have something to discuss.
About lacking embedded systems, controller has a configuration word where you can make the code protect enabled, and that will not allow others to see what kind of code written. Such thing can be implemented SCADA where whatever code or parameters you have given the system will not be accessible by others.
No, that is what you are saying is valid in a traditional control systems. But here we are talking about the information which is flowing across a network. So this the command which you are talking about, when they are flowing from an RTU or MTU to RTU, master terminal unit to a remote terminal unit, through cyberspace, through maybe a TCP/IP network, or even serial cables. Okay. The question is, how do you protect that information? And how do you ensure, and that information, the protection of the information cannot be done merely by encryption. Because even if you encrypt that link, I can still inject a packet which looks very legitimate, very, very legal and legitimate, but can cause tremendous damage to the physical process. So it is not only the traditional encryption, authentication, and confidentiality which will prevent systems from attack. That's what I'm saying. So a traditional control system view is that, you know, is that I have designed my control algorithm, I program my controller with this algorithm, and that's it. Traditionally you don't take into account any of the computational aspects of it or the communication aspects of it. So CPS probably is bringing the communication and computation part into the control systems. Another name for these systems perhaps could be networked controls, which is also an academic area of research. So the closest term for CPS could be networked control. Networked controls. For example, control using Ethernet. You know, using Ethernet cards, which is traditionally was not the case.
So how does the hardwired encryption can help on CPS? I'm basically talking about some module which is having handwritten encryption.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the keys are embedded into the hardware and things like that. No, but the problem is that, you know, even if you encrypt something, I'll give an example of a protocol called DNP3. I don't know how many of you may have heard about it. DNP3 is a protocol which is used in UK for all the electricity networks. It was designed in 1960s, when there was no question of security and cyber security and things like that. Now, there are many solutions which have been developed today which are encrypting DNP3 protocols. But I can take a packet of DNP3, okay, which is flowing from, let's say, a transformer to a control station. Before it enters the communication channel, okay, through manipulating the state estimator, okay, and it will encrypt the same information, decrypt it also. So encryption will not solve the problem. It has encrypted incorrect information, so it will decrypt also incorrect information.
That's what one of them you mentioned.
Yes. So encryption actually is not helping at all, because I could, you know, tinker with the state estimator. And what they call is bad data injection. I can inject some bad data into the state estimator, get a packet to reverse the voltage parameters of a transformer. As far as DNP3 is concerned, it looks like a legitimate packet because it is not leading into the payload. It passes the packet to the transformer, it reverses the voltage, many things can happen. It can trip a circuit breaker, it can give you an outage, power outage. Or in a very extreme circumstance, it can boil the transformer oil, burn it, all these things. So although encryption, authentication really help, but they by themselves will not be able to solve all the problems. So a study of these systems, modeling of these systems, and where these models can actually go wrong is also essential.
Consider the situation where you are trying to secure the command control and all other aspects of strategic weapons, either your own assets or attacks on your assets by enemy or other interested parties. So, is a solution to this to have not just only cryptographically controlled transmission, but to have fully secure, only, you know, extremely limited access hardware as well as software?
In many cases, this is possible, but there are increasingly number of incidents where such systems are coming in very close contact with IT systems. I'll give an example. Weapons and all that, I agree, can be completely isolated and you can create complete proprietary kind of environment. But let's take an example of a utility, electricity network. Let's take an example of Reliance or Tata Power. The Reliance power systems are, they have, it's a distribution system, okay, they distribute electricity, okay. And with the newer systems called energy management system, they collect information about electricity flow into the energy management system, okay, for the purpose of billing, because the billing is not manual, it is not based on manual entry into a computer, it is all automated. So whenever your electricity system comes in contact with a IT system, this IT system in turn is connected to the internet, okay. So you have all kind of vulnerabilities which are coming now. So in effect, your transformer or your circuit breaker or your turbine or a phasor management unit which is connected to this system today is vulnerable because we have interconnected all of these systems.
Just one quick comment. Is the flow in the case of this particular system is only It's one directional, right?
No, both directions.
Where is the need, where is the functionality that you need to kind of, in the case where from turbine all the way up to IT system, the direction is only reading, isn't it?
No. See, for example, there's generation electricity, there's a consumption electricity, right?
Yeah.
Now, in a smart grid, the information is flowing both ways.
Yes. Of course, it's both ways. You want to know what is the
demand.
What is the demand?
And then you produce, yes. Mm.
But I somehow thought maybe only if it is about a metering kind of a thing, or if it is, then in that case the direction is only one.
In a smart grid, there is a possibility of you being a consumer as well as a seller of electricity. Yeah. See, for example, the hybrid electric vehicles today, which are actually appearing in the road now, there's a possibility in theory that actually you can plug in your hybrid electric vehicle to the grid and sell electricity in the night. So actually electricity is flowing now both ways in smart grid.
Launching of a weapon, for example, requires often control of both the military as well as political elements.
Right.
And so therefore you have to have two-way communication.
Sure. And those, I think only I somehow took this as just only that particular example. I think
this is also the other kind of issue. Other reports where, from our country, where medical devices, implants have been deliberately compromised.
No, I'm not aware of any Indian scenarios in this, but there have been cases in US and UK where this has happened, where implantable medical device has been compromised.
Deliberately.
Controlled environment, yes, it has been done.
Where does the law stand on this? Who holds the responsibility?
Well, in this case, I would say in this case, the device manufacturer will be held responsible because his system is getting compromised. But as to my knowledge, I don't think there's any law which can hold him responsible actually in Indian context. And in Indian context, actually, there are not too many cases of implantable devices as of today. There may be perhaps in lakhs in India, if not more. But in some countries, it is quite. Insulin pumps, automated insulin pumps are very common in Europe and US. I don't see too many insulin pumps, automated insulin pumps in India today.
Yeah, this point about responsibility of the device, this somewhat doesn't gel with, similarly if you have computers and if your computer is getting attacked or something, how can you say that it is the responsibility of the person who makes the computer? Is that, it looked a bit...
Your computer is little, will come in a different category because you are using the computer and you are modifying this program. You're installing things, you're writing things, you're deleting things. So in many ways, once the computer is in your possession, you're the owner of the computer. But when you talk about medical device, it is a closed appliance. I'm not tinkering with it. So if I'm not tinkering with it, there's only an input and output. Okay. It's almost like buying a motor car. If something goes wrong with the motor car, the motor manufacturer is responsible. In similar way, something goes wrong with the security of a medical device. To my understanding, the manufacturer should be accountable, but we don't have any law as of today in India. Although they are talking about coming with the law of the privacy law. This has been tabled in the parliament to discuss some of these issues. But I don't know how that privacy law will apply to such.
Your initial slides really say that there is no real overlap between. So with that, once again, let us thank today's speakers here for his.
Thank you very much.
And our public relations.
I really enjoyed talking today. Thank you very much. Thank you, Satya. Thank you very much.